had different names over the years on WGHN, but in one way or another, we've had a lot of historical programs on. And a number of years ago, the program was called the OTS Show, which was those were the initials for old time stuff. And one of the main people on that program was John Van Skelvin. And we have John back with us again this afternoon. Thank you for coming up, John.
You're welcome, Doug. It's my pleasure and privilege to talk about this.
About the old days in Grand Haven. I think maybe what we ought to do, since this is sort of a new experience on this program for us again, and the audience is a little bit different, we've been doing this on Saturdays for a long time, is go back and talk about John Van Skelvin, who John Van Skelvin is, and what he's doing in this town, and what he ever did in this town. You were here a lot longer than I, John.
Yeah, I guess it was.
But we talked about historical things some 10 years ago when I first came on the staff. You did long before that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did it with
Dick Gillespie.
Dick Gillespie, that's how we got started on it. A rascal, he roped me into it. And then I did it with Dan Bethel for a while.
All right.
And
right.
That was a lot of fun doing it with Dan.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it will be doing it with you.
Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You've always been a resident of Grand Haven.
I was born in Grand Haven on the 20th day of December in 1899. So if I live to be 100 years old, I'll see three centuries.
Wow.
I don't remember much of the last one.
No,
and I don't think I'll see the next one.
So you went to school here?
But I went to school here, and I was born right down here on Fulton Street. In those days, you were born in your home. There wasn't any hospital.
Wasn't there?
No. And I had three brothers. I had really four brothers, but I never knew the first one because he passed away when I was only a year old, so I never knew him.
I see.
So only a few of the real old-timers around town remember him, and of course I didn't. He would have been 80 years old by now.
Oh, my.
If he'd lived, but of course he died as a child 6 years old. And I often thought, they always said he died of the colic. I imagine that if modern medicine, he died of appendicitis, as far as I know, but of course I never knew him. But I think I was born in kind of a lucky time. I've seen a lot of changes, probably more changes than any other lifespan, age. I started out to go to the Columbus Street School. No, I didn't either. I went to kindergarten first.
Where was kindergarten?
Kindergarten was in the Central School. And I didn't like school.
Didn't you?
No. And I didn't like kindergarten.
Didn't you?
I liked to be outdoors. I'll never forget kindergarten, I suppose I did something that the teacher didn't like. There was a teacher by the name of Miss Stewart. She was a Scotch woman. And she set me out in the hall.
Uh-oh.
And I couldn't sit still. And so when she came out in the hall and found me off my little red chair, why, she made me stay after school that night. So that didn't start school out very well for me. And I didn't like her as long as she lived, and I didn't like school either. But then we started down at the Columbus Street School, which was down here where the old bowling alley was, and they had the first grade there, and the second, and the third and fourth grade were in one room. And we had some pretty nice teachers down there.
This was under the Grand Haven Public School System.
The Grand Haven Public School System. Now, the schools, the kids today, don't know how lucky they are to go to a school like they're going to, compared to the old Columbus Street School. Any of these people went to a country school would know, but although they had a modern heating system, a hot water heating system, and the boiler room was alongside of the school. John Mull was the janitor when I was a kid, and the kids got to school early, which very seldom happened because they always waited till the last minute. And we did particularly because we only lived two blocks from the school, and all we had to do was sneak through the backyards and made it about one block. But you used to get down there in the winter, and old John Maul had a chair there that was packed full of pillows and blankets and stuff. You know, the springs were all broken yeah. out of it and everything, and that was kind of a comfortable place to sit and listen to the boiler sing, the coal burner, of course, and it steamed a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. how it sounds when a tea kettle is boiling, and mm-hmm. so it was kind of cozy down in there, but and we'd have to get to school. Well, anyway, then I went through the fourth grade, and then we went up to the central school.
Oh, yeah.
But I got started working, and as a youngster, I started peddling papers. So I got around. I had a route for the Grand Rapids Herald. That's defunct.
Yeah, I remember the Herald.
And
it was a morning paper.
Morning paper. I go after the Grand Rapids Press on a Sunday morning. Every once in a while, I ask for the Herald. That was a good paper. And then the Grand Rapids News was the evening paper, and I had a route for that, too.
Oh.
It was the same route.
Is
I
that
had
right?
the same customers. And so I made $3 a week. Now, I was probably, 9, 10 years old then? And in those days, they didn't plow the sidewalk or shovel them, and you walked in snowdrifts up to your hips
mm-hmm.
to peddle papers in the winter. But it was always fun. I liked being outdoors. And
$3 a week was not
$3
all that
a week
bad.
Was
it,
not
John?
Bad, no. So I started when I was about 10 years old to pay for my own clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go bring John Vandenbush $1 a week. John Vandenbush ran the Enterprise Clothing Store, which was downstairs in the building which was vacated by the dime store.
Oh.
And so I bring John $1 a week and pay for my clothes.
Is that right?
And it was...
Would he let you pay for it that way?
Yeah, he was glad to get it.
Was he?
I guess there were some of them that didn't pay for it. Same as there is today.
No.
Oh, yeah. John was a fine fella. I worked for him afterward, later. Well, I didn't finish school. I'm a dropout.
Are you really?
Yeah, heck yes.
You went to the School of Hard Knocks, John.
School of Hard Knocks. I suppose I should have been in all kinds of trouble, shouldn't
yeah.
I? But I wasn't.
No.
I had good parents. They took me to church. They didn't send me. They took me.
Yeah.
And they took me to Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
And we had rules and regulations that we had to live up to, and I'm very, very thankful for all of these.
You had other jobs when you were a young man.
Yeah.
You talked, we've talked on your other program
yeah.
on Saturday morning about when you delivered bread.
Yeah, well, I started with this paper road, and I finally, somehow or another, got to working in the bakery. My uncle, George DeYoung, who just passed away last February at age 100 and plus.
Really?
Was a part owner, and he and Cliff Paff, the father of Cliff Paff, the mm-hmm. alderman, and John Paff from Gardner, Denver, ran this bakery. I guess they started out with a third partner, but he didn't last. He sold out to them. Well, those were nice days. I enjoyed working at the bakery. As a matter of fact, Doug, for some reason or another, there must be something wrong with me, but I always enjoyed working.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I still do.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm still at it. And, I worked at the bakery, and then I...
Where was that bakery?
Down where the Jilljoy shop is now,
is
now.
Right downtown.
Yeah, so I've been downtown all my life.
Yeah, you've been downtown.
And this end of town is, to me, is well, it's home. Like I said to Ernie Franks one time, he was talking about something downtown. I said, oh, heck, when you were a kid, you never got this side of 7th Street. And he said, well, you never got the other side of 8th. And I said, well, that was almost true. I did. We used to get around. But while we were kids, my grandfather, on my mother's side, Henry Sprick, ran a livery barn. And this livery barn was two doors from our house. granddad and grandmother lived next to the barn in a pretty good-sized house there, and we lived in a smaller house next to it. Four boys and mother and dad, and we were pretty well taken care of there. And as I say, we had work. You didn't have any furnace in those days. You had a...
What did you have?
Stove. Coal
stove. Just a wood stove?
No, coal. I remember the... you probably don't remember these big hard coal stoves, base burners they called them.
No, this is not a potbelly type of stove you're talking about.
It's potbelly, but it's different than that type of a stove. These hard coal stoves were a big stove. They were dolled up. They had a lot of nickel plate on them.
Uh-huh.
And the doors around where the fire was isinglass.
Oh.
Transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could see the fire. You burned hard coal in them. It had a magazine in the top of it. You poured the coal in the top of it, and as the coal burned, it slid down in this chute and burned, and then you shook it once in a while and shook the ashes out of the bottom. The ashes were real fine and white. There were no clinkers in it or anything.
Mm-hmm.
This hard coal was more expensive than the other, but it didn't smoke.
And efficient then, huh?
And it was quite efficient. And, of course, they were like all stoves. When you stood up in front of it, your stomach was warm and your back was cold.
Yeah.
But it did a fairly good job of heating a house. We had a house of three bedrooms. And
all on one floor?
All on one floor, yeah.
Would you use any fans or anything to help circulate that warm air, John?
No.
How would you get
heck,
that
you didn't have a fan. We didn't even have electricity in the house when we were kids.
Not, huh?
No, we didn't get electricity in that house till we were, 12, 14 years
really?
Old. Yeah. You burned kerosene lamps. And, of course, we weren't... Well, I suppose we were on the wrong side of the tracks. I don't know. My dad was a butcher, and he had lots and lots of friends. I remember when he died at 62, they had to put chairs up in the aisle in the church for the funeral,
mm-hmm.
so he must have had some friends.
Yeah.
But anyway... I often wonder how in the dickens he fed us. With four kids, and we all had a pretty good appetite, and butcher wasn't earning great big salaries in those days. Well, as a matter of fact, he told me more than once he paid $275 for the house when he bought it. Yeah. And later on, I remember he put a new kitchen on it. And the kitchen cost over $500 in those days. Now, what could you do with $500 toward a kitchen today?
What's where that house stood now, John?
That house is still there.
Is the house still there?
222 Fulton Street.
Is that right?
Still there, yeah. It's still a nice-looking little house. They tore down the one next to it, and Joe Parenta is building an addition to the 3rd Street furniture. Parenta's furniture store there. But our little house is still there.
Still there.
Well, then, my grandfather and grandmother lived right next door to us, and so we were pretty close to them, and Granddad ran the livery barn. There again, we were lucky. We had horses. There weren't many people who had automobiles.
Did they?
Not in those days. And we had horses, and my grandfather would let us drive or ride any horse he got. I don't think he ever had a horse that he wouldn't trust us with.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And I always said he was a very poor businessman, but he was a darn good horse trader.
Was he?
Yep. And he knew horses. And he traded horses, and he was honest.
What did he do with all those horses?
Well,
rent them or
rented them in the livery barn. He rented them. He had... I don't know. The barn burned down in 1906. There were 26 horses and 3 cows were burned to death.
Oh, they lost them, huh?
Lost them all.
Was it during the night or something?
During the night, yeah. One horse got out, and he was badly burned. They had to shoot him.
Oh, yeah.
But the rest of them were all burned to death.
Bad.
And he had one horse in there that was a stallion that he'd sold, and was going to deliver him the next day. Now, I don't remember what price he was going to get for them, because compared to today's prices, it wouldn't mean anything. Yeah. But I think he was going to get a couple of $100 for them, which was a heck of a lot of money for a horse in those days. And this was a pretty fine stallion, but he was burned to death, too.
Now, would you have insurance to cover things like that in those days, John?
He had a little, not very much. Not very much. And as I say, he was a poor businessman, so I don't think he paid too much attention to that. He was one of these fellows that was always hard up, because it cost a lot of money to feed these horses.
I'm sure it must.
And he kept books in his head. He wouldn't be much good today. If anybody owed him $2, he knew it, and he remembered it. And if he paid it to him, well, he remembered it was paid, and that was all there was to it. And when you got $2, you put it in your pocket. And a good deal like we did when we had 10 boxer dogs. When we got sold one, we bought dog food enough to feed the other 9. Yeah. That's the way he did with the horses. Mm-hmm. But he had quite a livery barn.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, all of the hacks, and they used these hacks for funerals. See, all the funerals were by horse-drawn vehicle. The hearse, each hearse belonged to the funeral directors. There was, in those days, was Boer and Tom Keel. And they were two funeral directors. Well, there were more than that. There was Isa Hallstein. Isa Hallstein was down on Fulton Street, where Miller had the dairy, where there's an apartment now. And he had a furniture, and most of them were furniture and undertaking. They didn't call themselves morticians in those days. They were furniture and undertaking.
Furniture? What was it?
Well, they sold furniture.
I see. It's an unusual combination, though,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, I guess it wasn't really.
Uh-huh.
It never seemed that way to me, because, that's the way it
was.
That's
where you always saw
them. Yeah.
Huh?
And then there was another one on the corner of 3rd and Columbus Street, where the Tribune building. That was Hanson. They were both old men, in my estimation. Of course, I was a kid, so how old is an old man when you're a kid? Why, if they were 50 or 40, they were probably old. But anyway, but they weren't the popular ones. Boer and Keel were the popular ones, and they owned their own hearses.
Where were they located?
Well, Boer was where Doherty is now, and Keel was right next to him where Floto is.
You mean they're both right next to each other downtown?
Mm-hmm.
Did they get along with each other?
No, they didn't. You shouldn't have brought that up. But they didn't.
Couldn't they get along?
No, they didn't like each other.
Well, they were so close to each other, they'd probably get ornery if somebody would go to the wrong.
Yeah, no, they didn't get along with each other. I don't think they spoke to each other.
Is that right?
And they were both nice people.
Were they?
Old man Keel was kind of a grumpy old fellow, but I guess he was a nice fellow. And his son Tom was Tom Keel was a pretty nice guy, I always thought. And, of course, John Boer, we knew John Boer ever since, I guess as long as I knew anybody. And John Boer was a real fine fellow.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very outgoing sort of a person. And he was a very good friend of my father and mother.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived out on Washington Street. And he has 2 daughters that are still living, Mrs. Wagner and Mrs. Hook, Ruth Hook and Corny Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Boer, Henry Boer, died last winter. He was, 86, 88, like that. John Boer was way up in the 80s, but he was a spry old gent. I remember him he always telling the story of when he went to buy a suit, and one of his daughters went with him, and the daughter sort of picked out a suit that she liked, and she said to the clothing man, she said, I like that suit. She said, that'll be just the right for Dad. And she says, Dad, did you like it too? And of course, he didn't want to offend Corny, so he said, yeah, I like it. And then he went back to the clothing man. He says, get that suit out of here. He says, that's an old man's suit. he wanted
a young man's suit.
Yeah, sure. And he was, he was a very popular man, very fine man. Well, that was, of course, that was down in our end of town, too.
Sure.
And the downtown was our playground. We were downtown.
Was it a dirt street then, John? Or yeah, what was Washington
dirt
Street?
Washington was a dirt street. Washington was a dirt street until 1911. And it was pretty well taken care of. They of course, there were a lot of horses around, but they kept the street clean. Yeah. They had a man walked up and down the street with a cart and a shovel and kept it clean. And they mm-hmm. had a sprinkler wagon. And they kept the dust down.
Did the city do this? Was this mm-hmm. a municipal service?
Yeah. So, well, then, I grew up and I worked there at the bakery for quite a while. And I started working there for 25 cents a week and all I could eat. And I always thought they'd have been better off if they'd have
paid you straight
paid
up.
Me and paid me and then made me pay for what I ate.
Well, but you came down then from the money you were making peddling papers, John. If you were making about $3.
This was before I peddled papers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And I got the paper out. Oh. And that didn't interfere too much with uh-huh. my bakery. That job was riding with the, you know, how kids like to ride with the delivery man.
Oh, yeah.
And we helped. I helped dish out the donuts. I could count. See, I was able to count.
Well, did they have stuff in bags? I mean, was it stuff all in the open?
No, you put it in bags. It wasn't like it is today. Your bread wasn't wrapped in the early days either. I remember when they got the first bread wrapper, we used to wrap bread and, they wrapped it in wax paper.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran it through a little electric trough, a groove. It was hot on both sides, and this wax melted, and so the bread was sealed. That was real sanitary then.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? It was a good deal.
I was just wondering, when you delivered that stuff on the back of a wagon,
you got a few flies once in a
while. Sounds like you'd get flies.
Yeah, I had a few flies once in a while, but people weren't quite as fussy in those days.
No.
But the wagon was covered, and it wasn't an open wagon.
Mm-hmm.
I had a big wagon with a, something like the old mail wagons. Did you see the parade the other day? They had an antique mail wagon.
Yep.
Well, they had a wagon similar to that, only it was horse-drawn. They had a big brown mare that pulled that wagon. I remember her name was Dinah, and she was a big horse. She ran away with me one time.
Did she?
Good
night. Was that right downtown, too?
Yeah, that was... Then I was a little older then. I was probably 15, 18, something like that. No, I couldn't have been. Well, I went to work in the Weather Bureau when I was 16. But I moonlighted at the bakery then.
That's because you want to keep eating that food.
And I worked in the Weather Bureau. You got to get up there early in the morning, take the first barometer reading and read the instruments, and then you were free for a while. So I worked at the bakery in the meantime. I don't know when this was, but I was coming down the on Fifth. I came down Fifth Street, and then the street was paved then. Washington Street was paved. Must have been maybe 15 or 16, 1915 or 16,
was
14.
Was it a cobblestone paving?
Then? No, this was a brick, red
the
brick
real.
Pavement. You
uh-huh.
saw them when they dug it up there the
bricks.
Other day.
Yeah, okay.
It was that red brick.
Mm-hmm.
It was good pavement. That mm-hmm. was a real good pavement. It was a little noisy with a steel-tired wagon,
mm-hmm.
but it was a nice pavement. Well, I came around the corner of 5th and Washington Street coming down the hill, and one of the tugs dropped off the wiffle tree.
One of the what?
Tugs. The tugs.
I don't know what tugs
are.
Well,
the tug is the part of the harness that pulls the wagon.
Pulls it,
fastens on the ham collar or the breast collar, whichever you have. If you have a horse with a breast collar, that's the just a strap leather
mm-hmm.
business that goes across his front end, and then that has two tugs on it that go to the wiffle tree. And one of these fell off and hit Dinah in the hind leg.
Uh-oh.
And, of course, when that hit her in the hind leg, away went Dinah.
Did it scare her, you mean, or what?
Sure, it scared her. I suppose she thought I was hitting her with a whip. I don't know what she figured, but she let loose, and she came down Washington Street.
Coming toward downtown?
Coming toward downtown. Well, of course, all I could think of was I'd better get her stopped before I got to the river.
Yeah.
Well, I remember Walt Minnett came running out of the bakery. He saw her going by the bakery, lickety-split, on a gallop. He ran out and tried to catch me, but an automobile came around the corner of 2nd and Washington Street. I never forget this. This was Andy Thompson. Andy Thompson used to run the American Brass Novelty, and Andy had a Mitchell touring car.
I never even heard of
a Mitchell.
I don't believe so.
No, it's a Mitchell touring car.
Is that a big car?
It was a big one. It was a good-sized car. And I remember the thing had red wheels and a black body. It was a good-looking automobile. Mm. And he had the top down. And when he had the top down on those cars, you had a kind of a hood that fit over it so that you could, dust and dirt. Because most of them were dirt roads. If you didn't, you'd get them pretty dirty. He pulled around the corner of 2nd. He didn't see me coming. I was down the street. And he pulled around the corner, and he slowed up, and I got Dinah behind that automobile, and she had to stop.
Wow. You were heading right down to the river, too, weren't you?
I had both feet on the dashboard, and I was hanging out the line just as tight as I could pull. As a matter of fact, I think she was pulling the wagon with her teeth.
Really?
With her mouth, yeah. But I got her stopped before we got to the river anyway, so that was quite an experience.
Boy, I'll bet.
But, well, that took care of things pretty well then.
Yeah.
And what did I do after that?
You delivered. Didn't you work in the meat market at all?
Not very much.
I thought you told once where you delivered something.
Oh, I didn't. I did that when we were kids. Spare time, like a kid hanging around the market.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was telling about that here a while ago when
you said you dropped the pork chops
about the
one
restaurant.
Time.
Yeah. Well, we did that. But we did a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
We took care of 26 horses in the morning before I went to school, too.
Really?
Yeah. After my granddad sold the livery barn, he kept in the business of trade, buying and selling horses. He sold a horse from his bed the day before he died.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
He also invented a spavin cure.
You remember?
I remember you telling Dan about that one time.
God,
you said that stuff burned.
I wish I knew what that stuff was. And none of the druggists know what it is. I've described it to them, but they none of them know what it was.
Wasn't that Sprick Spavin Cure?
Sprick Spavin Cure, yeah.
But did that help the horses? Was it really a Spavin Cure?
It cured it, yeah.
Did it?
Yes, it did. A horse with a Spavin was lame, and after you blistered it with that stuff...
But it was some kind of hot stuff, wasn't it, John?
Sure was. Maybe it hurt so that the burn hurt so that he forgot the spam. And maybe
horse didn't dare limp anymore.
Maybe it was like acupuncture. Huh? Yeah, and all the stuff was good. And the way I remember my granddad telling about that, the way he got started on that, some transient horse trader came through here and said to my granddad, "Do you know any horses around here, anyone that owns a horse that's got a spavin?" And he said, "Yes." He said, I know several of them." He said, "What do you want of a horse with a spavin? Nobody wants a horse with a spavin." Well, the fella kind of smug-like, and he said, I can take care of that. And he told him of a few places where there were horses like that, and the fella bought them up and cleared up the spavin. It left a little... hairless skin on him at that spot. He didn't put too much on it. And he said, "You've been pretty good to him." He said, "I'm going to give you the recipe or the prescription for this." And that's where he got
it. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. I see you moving your watch.
We're all out of time.
We've talked half an hour,
John.
My gosh.
We're going to be doing this the first Monday of every month from now on, whenever we can.
Once a month you want to do it?
Yeah. Okay.
Sure, that's all right.
Good.
It's fun talking about it.
Well,
I don't want people to get the idea that I'm some old fogey that's
getting ready to quit.
I like to talk about these things, but I'm still looking ahead for the future.
We're going to look for you again at another program,
okay,
John. Thanks for being here.
Okay, Lord willing, I'll be here.
All right, goodbye.
So long, Doug.